I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
The Wizards just unveiled a New Jersey option. I'll tell you about that coming up in just a few minutes. Right now, though, it is time to go blitzing on Grant and Danny. We'll cover the teams in town you care about the most. Let's get started. We'll double dip with our boy Craig Hoffman, who covers the Redskins. Hoff, I want to start with the injury report. Ziggy Hood had the arm injury, came off the field, looked bad. Yesterday, Jay Gruden said his season is done. How long is he going to be out?
He just doesn't need surgery, which is good for him. I mean, really, the rest of the season, which is the most relevant thing. But without surgery, you know, if he lets it rest for a couple of weeks, you know, that starts his rehab process. I would think it's, you know, we weren't really given a timetable, but like 6 to 8 weeks seems rather reasonable. So I would think he's able to get a pretty full off season in. It's just unfortunately going to start for him a week early and it's going to involve some rehab on that elbow.
So on the defensive line, then they'll dress five as they normally do. I mean, is this an opportunity for a guy like AJ Francis or perhaps Anthony Lanier to boost their status? I would think Lanier's done enough that they feel good about him going into next year, right?
Yeah, definitely. So last week they dressed six linemen, which Jay described as more of a luxury, but they've been dressing five most of the year. They're fine with five, so they're not even going to make a move. Like, they're not even going to put Ziggy on IR, even though they could. They're just going to go with the five that they've got in Francis and Lanier and McGee and McClain and Ioannidis. Like, those are your five. They'll rotate those guys inside, and guys like Francis and Lanier will probably play that nose tackle spot, and they'll see what they can do.
Otherwise, injury front, anything notable still? Any players we're curious about? I mean, did they finally shut Zach Brown down, or are they still waiting to see if he'll play? How's that going to go?
Brown wasn't here. We just got out of the bubble for practice. Brown's not around. I think his season's probably over. Marshall Spate had been sick over the weekend and played really well through the flu on Sunday, but he wasn't here today, so hopefully he's feeling better. And it's still just a sickness thing, and he'll get back and be back for this weekend. The one that I would be interested in is Ryan Anderson. Can they get him another game? The second-round pick who's been obviously disappointing this year. They're hoping to develop him over this offseason and move towards next year. But he was working on the side today and that didn't, you know, look like he's any closer to returning. So his season might be over as well, and he might wind up inactive on Sunday. But Anderson's probably the most intriguing one at this point in the year.
OLB position with Anderson moving forward. Junior Gallette is a free agent. I'd love to see him brought back, but my guess is he's going to want to go somewhere where he can play more. You've got Kerrigan here, Smith under contract. Trent Murphy's also a free agent, but you'd have to imagine he could be brought back on the cheap after missing the entire season. How do you see that position playing out, and do they still have a need to try to get better there, or is that group good enough?
I would think that group is good enough. I mean, Kerrigan's really, really, really good. He's not Von Miller, but whatever the next class down is, he's that. If Preston could take another step, you know, he's getting closer and closer. Like, his good is in Kerrigan's class. It's just he's not consistent enough to even put him and Ryan in the same sentence yet. Ryan's the model of consistency. So if you can get Preston to continue to grow and improve, and he's finishing the year strong, you know, and obviously those guys are going to be helped by the return of Jonathan Allen next year and the continued growth of Ioannidis. I would think the bigger needs are on the inside of the defensive line more than the outside linebacker spot, especially if Trent Murphy can come back and be as good as he was. Because you got to remember, last year, even though Kerrigan made the Pro Bowl, I thought Murphy was the better player last year, both as a pass rusher and against the run. So if he comes back, like that's your addition. Gallette's the interesting one. You know, and Anderson would have to take a step, obviously. That's the big key to that. If not, yeah, you need another guy. I would love to see Gallette back. He's been spectacular down the stretch. If he got 40 snaps a game, like, he'd be getting two sacks. It's incredible how good he's been down the stretch. His pop and his zip are back. His feel for the game is back, but I think that's going to be enough that he's probably going to get paid elsewhere. And I think if you're looking at the construction of this roster and some of the money you might spend, I think your money's probably better spent elsewhere because you already have a lot of money invested in Kerrigan. And you're probably going to invest in Preston here in a couple of years when it's time for him to get an extension.
Craig Hoffman's our Redskins beat reporter. Beltway Blitz here on Grant and Danny. What about the wide receiver position? Josh Doctson has been the guy getting the most targets over the last couple of weeks. Do you think they're going to be in the market considering that a need to either spend on a starter or draft in the first few rounds? Or do they kind of let some of the young guys like Doxson and Harris and Grant continue to develop?
I think that you are in the market for another starter at the wide receiver position, understanding that Crowder is your slot guy, like he's your three and a starter because you don't play with a fullback, that you have three starting receivers. I would love to see them get a speed guy in terms of like a quick twitch, more DeSean Jackson-esque type. I think that would be huge. Like Doxson is a speed guy, but it's in a different way than that kind of quick twitch combo. A guy that I can't believe doesn't have more buzz as a pending free agent that I absolutely love is Jarvis Landry. And I don't know if they're going to be able to afford him again. He's probably going to command a pretty big check. But like if you can go get Jarvis Landry, pair him with Doxson, and he's a guy who's got speed, can go over the top, but is also tough as nails and can make some of those Pierre Garçon type catches over the middle. Like I would love to see them get a guy like that. You see obviously what's available in the draft. But I do think that you are in the market for another top end receiver. When they bring in Pryor, I think it was the plan of we're going to pair him with Doxson, not that they were going to wind up being each other's sub, which is how it wound up playing out with the injuries and everything like that. So I do think that you're in the market for another, and then Grant is another guy you want because Ryan Grant's a free agent too. I think you wind up bringing him back, and he's another rotational depth piece that has been really productive and I think is getting better. But I don't think if he's your number two receiver that you're in a good spot as an offense. So I do think you wind up going, spending some money there, spending some kind of investment there, and we'll see whether it's draft or free agency.
Appreciate you, Craig. Great info as always, buddy.
You got it, Grant. See ya.
That's our Redskins beat reporter. Let's talk some hockey. J.J. Reagan, good pal of mine. I work with over at NBC Sports Washington. Pre-game, post-game, Caps face-off, Caps overtime. After three idle days, they're back on the ice tonight. Madison Square Garden in New York taking on the Rangers. All of a sudden, JJ, after a couple losses in a row, this becomes a pretty big game for the Capitals.
Yeah, it's always a big game against the Rangers, but you're absolutely right. Considering how things went in the desert, you lose a point to Arizona, a point that they probably should have had, and you lose 3-0 to Vegas. You don't want to get into a situation where you're taking a three-game losing streak, especially against a team like New York, who's in the Metropolitan Division. There's a little bit of a rivalry there, and every point matters in the Metro, so important game for the Capitals for sure.
What are the news and notes we need on the injury front? Sounds like a illness for Chandler Stephenson. So the decisions made as to who gets parked and DSP's back in the lineup.
Yes, Chandler Stephenson is out. He is sick and will not be traveling with the team because of the holiday restrictions for the NHL. The team is actually in Washington this morning and traveling today to New York rather than traveling there yesterday. So Chandler Stephenson will not travel with the team to New York. And it also looks like because of the back-to-back, Philip Grubauer will get the start tonight for the Capitals, which makes sense because tomorrow they're playing against the Boston Bruins. And as was talked about earlier this season, Braden Holtby seems to own the Bruins. So it makes sense to start him for that game. And you give Philip Grubauer a chance, a rested team playing against in an important game. So hopefully he'll get some help tonight, more so than he does when he starts the second end of a back-to-back.
The back-to-back thing is weird. I don't know when it started happening this way, but there was a time where Holtby played a lot of back-to-backs, and we never really thought twice about it. They played two times in two nights. Holtby would play both the games. He'd get a day off soon thereafter. Now it's like a rule. He can't possibly play both. Which day will Grubauer play? Why is that?
Well, the reason why Holtby played so much is because in the past, the Capitals were desperate for points. I mean, it wasn't always that the Caps were running away with the Metropolitan and with the league. And so whenever Barry Trotz thinks the team needs the points, he'll start Holtby in back-to-backs. And Holtby doesn't care. Holtby's a workhorse, so he'll do it. But the conventional wisdom in the NHL is that it's better to start one goalie on one night and start the backup the other night. It's an easy way to get more starts for your backup. At the end of the day, you don't want your starter playing 70-plus games a season, they just get too fatigued, and they'll never admit it. But the play starts to taper off in the playoffs. So it's better to, if you're going to split up the rotation anyway, it's better to get Grubauer in for these back-to-backs when conventional wisdom says you should. And it makes sense to give Holtby a little bit of rest. I know he would play all 82 games if you gave him the choice, but it's just, at the end of the day, it's not good for the goalies.
I will see you at NBC Sports Washington tonight, nationally televised, 8 o'clock drop of the puck up in New York. We got a late evening ahead of us, JJ.
As always.
Yeah, they seem to always be that way, don't they? Thanks, buddy.
Thanks a lot.
Happy holidays. Good catching up with you. See you tonight. Caps fans, there you go. Wet the palate a little bit on your club. 3 days off for the Caps. Came at a good time after the consecutive losses. Next on Grant and Danny. Lots still to get into on the show. I told you I wanted to dabble into a conversation on the Wizards jerseys they just unveiled. They've got another option that they could potentially wear at some point. I'll tell you about that. Also want to hit on the Redskins trying to finish their season 3-0 and whether or not you care about getting to 8-8. We'll do that next on Grant and Danny.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
What the final three games of this season ultimately will end up meaning to the fan base if the Redskins can go 3-0. And I want to see, taking your temperature on this, if you agree with me or not, because here was my thought. You go back to the last couple days of November right after Thanksgiving. The Redskins were in Dallas playing the Cowboys. They got shellacked in a game in which they actually got off to a really good start. You may remember, defensively, they forced 3-3 and outs in a row out of the chute. Dak Prescott couldn't do anything. And for the course of the game, really didn't do anything. There was no Ezekiel Elliott. Alfred Morris was pretty effective between the tackles, rushing the football, particularly in the second half when they wore the Redskins' defense down. The Skins couldn't stop their running game in the last couple quarters. But the Redskins got embarrassed on national TV, not because of a lack of preparation or a bad game plan. They moved the ball inside the five the first time they touched it. Cousins had a ball thrown right off of Jamison Crowder's hands, intercepted. Crowder then fumbled when they had field position in a 0-0 game, fielding a punt right around midfield. They would have had first and 10 in Dallas territory. He fumbles and the Cowboys get the football. It was a game where they turned it over three times very early, I think four times in the game, and they fumbled the game away, literally and figuratively. So they lost going away 24 points, give up a special teams touchdown. As I said, offensively, they got nothing going. Defensively, it was a terrible second half. They just melted down. The next week after that was their week where they're going to respond. They're going to show everyone that they've got resilience and a reserve here they can tap into. On December 10th, out in Los Angeles against the Chargers. And that was far and away the most devastating game they played this year. As a fan, if you turned off that game in the third quarter, you had every right to. They lost by 17 points, 30-13. Game was actually not that close. If you remember, I believe they had scored 7 points before Bashaud Breeland took a interception back for a touchdown. They just had not only their worst game of the year, but a game where pretty much nothing went right. And it was the one time this year, as I've said many times on these airwaves, where I thought they didn't have any chance before the game started because of A, their game plan, B, their preparation, C, their passion. They just didn't look invested at all going cross-country in December to play that game. So after that game, they were now 5-8. It looked like 6-10 was a possible. 5-11 was a potential option as well. They certainly weren't going to win three straight and go 8-8. No way, after the way they played in those two games, being outscored 38-14 and 30-13. You've been a Redskins fan for a long time. You know this is what it looks like. I have seen this movie before. Let me put the DVD in the Blu-ray player. Three games to go. There's going to be leaks. We're going to be watching them get beat by 15 and 16 points at a time. They're not going to show up. They're just not going to care. Well, someone forgot to tell this group that. They beat the Cardinals at home. They dominated the Broncos at home. And now they've got a Week 17 game they'll be favored in to try to get to 8-8. So back to the conversation I was having last night. My point was, I think fans of this team will take great pride in how they finished. And I personally view it as an endorsement by this locker room and these players of this program. See, players at the end of a season get to send a message to ownership with how they act and how they practice and how they work and how they play. So many times in the past, we've seen the Redskins send the message, I don't really care that much about these guys around me in the locker room or about this coaching staff as they're going 3-13 and 4-12. Look back to Shanahan's last year. I never advocate for coaches losing their job, but I wasn't going to spend 1 second saying that Mike Shanahan wasn't going to lose his job or shouldn't have been out, because if you want to use the phrase lost the team, I suppose, it was as if he wanted out. He was just lighting fire to the whole thing, but none of those players were playing for him. They knew there was nothing on the line and nothing at stake, and they played like it. The Redskins against Arizona, sacking Blaine Gabbert 5 times, and against Denver, doing what they did defensively, not allowing a touchdown into the final minutes, have played like they want Dan Snyder to know, and they want Bruce Allen to know, we want Jay Gruden here. We want Greg Minuski here. We'd like you to retain our coaching staff and to bring back as many of these players as possible. We think continuity with this group would be a good thing. Now, maybe you don't agree or you don't buy what I'm selling, that players are actually sending messages with their performance late in the year, but I have long thought that. I think you can look around the NFL every single weekend in the last, normally I'd say like 3 weeks of the year, right around the holidays, into week 17, and the teams that just don't care anymore make it very, very obvious. Like, you watch the Bears this weekend against the Vikings, where John Fox is probably going to be fired right after the season. Minnesota's got nothing to play for, really, in that game. I bet you Chicago loses by 20. Chuck Pagano is going to be out in Indianapolis. They're hosting the Texans, who are 4-11. If the Texans don't want Bill O'Brien fired, they'd better play like that's a guy you want back. Because the evaluation is happening. And when I was debating this and talking to a buddy yesterday, the conversation we were having was basically, do fans really care if they get to 8-8 and avoid a losing season? Players care. Kirk Cousins said on the show with me yesterday, and even in his press conference right after the game, we don't want to be considered a losing organization. I want this team to be synonymous with winning. We want people to think about the Redskins and think, oh, that's a credible team. That's an organization that's run pretty well. If you string together losing seasons, that's how you are viewed. But if you go 9-7, and last year 8-7-1, I like to say that should have been 9-7 because you missed an extra point basically from Dustin Hopkins in overtime. It would have been back-to-back 9-win seasons, 18-14 over 2 years, but it is what it is, 8-7-1. And then this year, if you go 8-8 again and you haven't had a losing season in 3 years, you're not a loser anymore. Now you can laugh if you want to and say, oh man, the bar is so low. I hear tough guy Redskins fans say this all the time. Man, you guys are losers. You're cool with mediocrity. I'm not cool with it. If they're still going 8-8 in 3 years, I'm not going to be happy. But a couple years ago, they were going 4-12 and 3-13. I haven't forgotten that you have. That it makes you tougher than me. It makes you cooler than me. You can say your platitude louder than me, and that's fine. It just means I have a memory that you don't have of going to FedEx Field knowing the team didn't care in December because they were going to roll the football out, lose by 19, get embarrassed by the Kansas City Chiefs, and everyone's going to go home and celebrate Christmas with another Redskins team that in no way gave 3 seconds of thought about even playing 100% as hard as they could at the end of the year, which is what this team has. So here's what I want to know from you. This buddy was saying, dude, I'm a fan. I'm telling you, nobody cares about 8-8 versus 5-11. And I don't buy that. The question is this simple. When they were 5-8 and they could have finished 5-11, you probably thought that's a real possibility after those two losses. And here you fast forward after two wins and it looks like they're going to go 8-8. Does it make you feel any different at all about this team? Does it make you feel any better at all about this team? Or maybe more important than this group, because this one's going to be very different next year, about the direction of the program. Jay Gruden said this week, 8-8's a big deal to us. Kirk Cousins said this week, we need to be 8-8 so that we're not a loser, so that we're not a losing team. We're trying to change the culture of being a loser. Well, they have kind of done that. If they get to 8-8 and 3 years in a row, they didn't lose more than they won. And that means nothing in the grand scheme of things. That and $5 will get you a donut at Safeway. I understand that no one as a fan gets season tickets or none of you buy your jerseys and spend your money on this team or listen to this show in the hopes that at the end of the year, maybe, just maybe, we could be 8-8. Oh, it'd be lovely. No one does that. But I'm saying, dealing with what was reality, living in the present, not in the what should have been, what could have been, what you'd like. With 3 games left, to win 3 in a row to go to 8-8, does it change or better how you feel at all? It could be specifically about Gruden. It could be specifically about the staff. But I just mean big picture. Or you say 5-11, 8-8, I don't care. You're not a contender. You're not making the playoffs. You're not close to a Super Bowl. Doesn't move the needle for me. That's what I want to know. 800-636-1067. I'm getting to your calls next on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Welcome back. Grant and Danny on The Fan without Danny. He will return. Fear not. Next week, we'll be at full strength. Redskins, they went away from going 8-8. I am trying to drill down with you guys on what that would mean to you as a fan. Jay Gruden says it's a huge deal in that building that they don't finish with a losing record. Kirk Cousins echoes those sentiments, says his goal is that when people think of the Redskins, they think that's a winning organization. They have a chance to remain 500 or better for a third straight season, something they've done once in 25 years at the turn of the millennium. That is it. I think for me, 8-8 would be considered not a successful year necessarily, but a job well done and admirable, and I would be excited by it if they win this weekend. Number one, they didn't do what so many Redskins teams have done in the past. When you get eliminated, nothing matters anymore. Let's just start hanging out and enjoying ourselves at Redskins Park and playing in the game room downstairs where all the big leather couches are and not really worrying about this weekend. Next thing you know, the fact that we're 4-8 is fine because we're going to end up 5-11, and who really cares? They didn't do that. I think that that matters. Culturally, it's a good, big thing, number one. Number two, maybe more importantly, though, I think that, and I believe in this, big picture processes in sports, a lot of teams, you know, before they can really become those perennial contenders, you don't get to just be the Patriots overnight. You don't just wake up and say, we're going to be the Steelers now. You get there by doing things correctly for a long period of time. This is one of those stretches where you did things correctly that helps you do that. People forget, you know, the Giants won the first of their couple of Super Bowls back in 2007. They were mostly average or worse in all the years leading up to that. In 2003, they were 4-12, then they were 6-10, then they had a double-digit win season, then they were 8-8 again, then they won the Super Bowl the next year. The Ravens are a good example as well. They got really hot with Flacco that one season, but right before that, it was kind of a several-year stretch where played really good defense. They were competitive. But I don't know that people thought this team's going to win a Super Bowl. And they were good. Like, they won 12 games a couple times. But they weren't New England. They weren't Pittsburgh. They weren't going to beat those teams. There are a lot of examples like that in football where you kind of hang around. You just move the needle a little bit. Okay, now we're not bad. We're okay. Now we're not okay. We're mediocre. Now we're not mediocre. We're pretty good. But we'll never win a Super Bowl. All of a sudden, we're Super Bowl contenders. It comes in spurts. But I think 8-8, if I was a fan, like you guys are, sitting at home, watching that game, it would matter because of what the last 3 weeks meant, more than the number. Screw 8 wins. Forget the number. It's just the team showed that it was better run than it has been in several years. Because when you have 20 guys on IR in their schedule in the past, if I would have told you that before the year, you'd say, oh my gosh, here we go again. 3-13, say goodbye to Jay Gruden. Oh, how about 500? How about a couple things go different? Maybe you're 10-6. Dan's in Fairfax. What's up, Dan?
Hey, bud. I pretty much agree with you almost wholeheartedly. The number, yeah, it's a nice little thing you can put in your stocking to be, well, we're 500 or better for the past 3 seasons. But I think a lot of us are more concerned about the effort and the consistency. If they are competitive and they try their best, especially with all the injuries this year, if they'd gone 6-10 but had been incredibly competitive, I think we would have been not happy, but we would have had that. But if Chris Thompson hadn't gotten hurt, just down the line.
Yeah.
But I think it's a nice to have the momentum, but also not just that they're winning, but because they're they believe in their coach. They believe in this system. Whether we, the fans, have reservations about front office, et cetera, those people in that building care about the guy that they care about.
So. And those three wins are proof of that. I think it's a great phone call. Thank you. I applaud you because I do not think in general that the average person that goes and sits in the crowd always thinks about things by way of process. I think it's more result-oriented. And that is not to fault fans. I'm not saying that that's wrong for a fan to feel that way. I just think that that is the way that they view it. And that is why sometimes you want to run a guy out of town or you want to move on from someone or you're calling me and telling me how dumb Sean McVay is after a play call you didn't like. And now you're saying they should have promoted him to head coach a year later. Now, that's something that happens, by the way. Always fun when you like find the same people that used to tell you that someone was stupid telling you that they should have been the head coach of the team a year later. Let's go to Kendall in Falls Church. What's up, Kendall?
Grant, what's going on?
How are you, buddy?
Everything is good. That's the nature of a fan. I mean, it's the results, man, the microwave generation. So if we were talking about Team A, let's call it, and Team A had suffered through, almost two decades of losing, sustaining nothing, building nothing, no consistency. And here you have 3 years where 1 year they win the division, the second year they're above 500, and the third year they're 500, but they're consistent. And, yeah, they're mediocre at this point, but if you've been trash for almost two decades, then mediocrity is an upgrade on the way to good. That's just how it works, like you mentioned. Then I would definitely be excited. However, this is not Team A. This is this is the Redskins. And they don't sustain anything. The only thing consistent with this organization is change. And the ultimate fan in the booth is running the thing. And he thinks exactly like a fan. So, if Kirk, which is likely at this point, is not here, then what are we doing? We're really starting over. And if we're starting over, Jay Gruden is 1 year from being fired. So, I mean, it looks good on the outside in terms of consistency and building for a regular team, but not this team, though.
You know what? It's a really good call because I think where you hit the nail on the head is this all revolves around what happens at quarterback. Because I do feel better about the direction of this thing than I have in years. And I mean, I've, like so many of you guys, every play, every weekend, 16 times a year since I was a kid, right? I have not felt this good about momentum that they're making and carry over sustainable, I would say, hope into next season in a while. But a lot of that goes away if Cousins is gone. I don't think necessarily you become a disaster right away. It depends on what your move is to replace Cousins. Now, do you stay stagnant as a mediocre team? Yeah. At best, you're probably going to hover around 500 again next year. That would be a really good thing without Kirk Cousins, because I would say you probably take a small step back. But if you invest properly on the defensive side of the ball and your defense becomes a fringe top 10 unit and you can run the ball a little bit and you've got a caretaker at quarterback, you should still be able to compete some next season. But I agree with you. It would be a lot easier to make the case and to sell if you're Dan or you're Bruce or you're Doug Williams or Eric Schaefer or anybody else in the front office. Look at what we're building here. Look what we're assembling. The problem is, the most important ingredient in the meal that you're promising us is going to be good. You welcome us into your kitchen 5 minutes into a 1 hour cooking process and you go, can you imagine you're going to get to eat this? It's going to be so good. But then what about if you don't get to use the food that I like the most that you're adding to that meal? And that's kind of what's happening, is we're forecasting what next year could look like when there's a real good chance the dude that has basically played the buoy in this floundering kind of treading water of the last couple seasons, if we want to call three mediocre years that, the buoy's gone. You're not holding on to it anymore. That's what's scary. Question I'm asking you is, do you feel any differently about this team if they win their final three and get to 8-8 than you would have if they went 5-11? Or is a year where you're not making the playoffs all the same and who really cares because they're not a Super Bowl contender and you view it more binary? Grant and Danny, no Danny on the Fan. True story, I'm in Leesburg last night. I go out to dinner at a place called Tuscarora Mill, which I love in Leesburg. I love Leesburg. Great place. And my waitress, turns out, as we find out at the end of the night, is a listener to the radio station. And she asks me, hey, can I ask you a question? And I'm like, oh, where is this going? This could be interesting. She can ask me about Thommy and the sound machine. What does she want to know? And she says, why did Lurch change his name to Bish? I said, I wish I could answer that question. I don't know. Bish Bucks are now a thing. They're not Lurch Bucks. They're Bish Bucks. She wanted to know why Lurch changed his name after 20 years. And I said, I got no answer for you. I'll ask him next time I see him. Bish. I kind of like that name, though. I would like it more if he wasn't Lurch for 20 years. Because you kind of got to stick with what got you there, I think. But I do like the name Bish. He's also tried to make Bick happen for Eric Bickle, which I kind of feel good about as well. 8-8 versus 5-11. Redskins were 5-8. We were taking calls from people saying they're going to lose their next three. They're about to potentially win their next three. If they do, will it change how you feel about the season, or had you already kind of made up your mind? I would just say this. I just tweeted this out at Grant H. Paulson. If you are a person who says that the last three games don't matter if they go 3-0, you are dismissing 18% of the season. That's a huge percentage of a regular year. 18% just didn't matter to you at all. Dan's in Woodbridge. Hey, Dan, how are you?
Doing well. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
Yeah, I would just say that there's a world of difference between 8-8, especially ending on a 3-win streak, including against the Giants, compared with 5-11. There's hope. There's consistency. There's job security. And if you look to San Francisco and see how much hope they're getting just from the possibility of going 5-11 with Jimmy G, you see like the kind of like elements there. So like to me, if they went out, there's a higher, you know, you have more job security with the coach. There's maybe a higher chance of retaining your very like good quarterback. Like I feel like it's just the way you want to go.
Appreciate you, buddy. Thank you. I am fascinated by the Jimmy Garoppolo situation, and I want to get into it next hour because the 49ers are in a very similar situation to what the Redskins were with Kirk Cousins, and I want to see if they learn from Washington's mistake. The 49ers are going to have to decide if they want to pay Jimmy Garoppolo on a pretty small sample size of excellence or if they want to play the game where they wait and see what he is. And if you're a Redskins fan, you know the answer is that they should pay him immediately. I was talking about this earlier, though. There are people saying that they need to pay him $27 million a year, basically what Matt Stafford just got. Dude has been good for 6 minutes. There are people saying he's a top five quarterback in the NFL. I mean, they're going nuts over this guy. And that's where we are now, by the way. Let's go to Brian in Annapolis. What's up, Brian? How are you?
Happy holidays, Mr. Paulson.
Thank you, sir. Happy holidays to you.
Man, I'm sitting here listening to a brother. I can't. Everything you said made sense, man. Like, if anybody's a true Redskin fan, all the years we brought in these superstar free agent buses, and we going 4-12, 3-13. By us, since Kirk has been starting quarterback and everything, man, we've just been a consistent team. We're a 500 team. Right now, we're earning respect. At first, nobody respected the Redskins at all. Used to say, hey, you're a Redskins fan. People look, laugh at you like your team is trash. Now they're like, oh, y'all getting better. I'd rather have that than being trash, man.
Thanks, buddy. And I understand that I get made fun of by Redskins fans all the time because my bar is so low. That's okay. I'm a loser. If you want to call me a loser, that's fine. I've been a loser my whole life. My team's lost since I was a toddler. There are no wins. So, yeah, I have a loser mentality. Cool. Guess what's better than being awful? Being mediocre. But I'm not just going to be mediocre forever. My hope is that mediocre turns into good. I'm walking along this path here, and I hope that you keep walking along that path further toward good. Look who's on the line. Our buddy Chad Dukes, who's going to be live at 2 o'clock, Chad Dukes versus the world. By the way, I'll be on stage with Dukes and with Danny and all the junkies at our big event, 106.7 The Fan Live, which is already sold out. The only way you can win tickets at this point to still get to that sold-out event starting on January 15th, we'll be listening to Chad Dukes versus the world every afternoon at 5:20. He's going to have the only tickets available to you at this point to go. What's up, Duke? Say?
Hello, Grappers. How are you?
I'm very well, buddy.
I'm looking forward to being on the stage. That'll be a hoot, pardon the strong language. I understand everything you're saying, and you're closer to the issue than I am because of the time you spend at the facility and knowing these guys, and I'm kind of just screaming from afar as a fan, but I kind of wanted to get your response to the angle that I was taking yesterday on the show, where these are nice. I would rather them win than lose, always. And I would rather them beat these bad teams, because then you say, well, you're beating bad teams. You're not a bad team. What I can't get away from is the past 2 years, they have had very blatant and open opportunities to win games and still have their season mean something and still be alive in a playoff hunt. And, you know, we've seen them kind of just walk into a hail of gunfire. And we've seen guys, I don't know if it's preparation, I don't know what it is, but, you know, last year with the Panthers game, Cardinals game, the Giants game, of course, at the end of the season, and this year what happened with the Dallas Cowboys, the way they ended the Saints game, and then, you know, people scoff because mathematically it was difficult, but that Chargers game, you go out there and you win, your season's alive, you don't, your season's over, and nobody showed up. I like the fact they haven't quit on Jay Gruden during these games against awful teams, but what about quitting on him when it mattered most, when your season was on the line? Because it does look like they did that.
Yeah, here's the thing is, I think if you have multiple games like that or a string of them, coaches get fired and it means that the culture's bad. I think a lot of teams have terrible games. Seattle's had one this year. I mean, there are playoff teams. Sure. The Steelers had a 5-pick game against Jacksonville where they got embarrassed. They're the best team maybe in the AFC, not the Patriots. They had one game like that this year. Now, the Cowboys game was an embarrassing loss as well, but I think most people can look at that game with the turnovers and the fumbles and everything that happened and say, that game went poorly for the 60 minutes that it was being played. Whereas the Chargers, and I said this afterwards, that's a game that, to me, the coaches gave them no chance, the plan gave them no chance, not one player seemed to care or be passionate or invested at all. That is a blow-it-all-up kind of game. They had one of those. And if they kept having performances where they didn't care, they weren't invested, they looked like that, then I'd be sitting here saying there's no reason to continue this process. But you're not allowed as an average team to have one awful game in a season? I disagree with that. I think they had that game at the worst possible time against a team, by the way, at the time that might have been the hottest team in football. And that's unfortunate that that happened. But I think you can have two conversations, which is, I guess in general, my point is you can crush them for that game, just like I still hold the Giants in Week 17 last year against Jay Gruden. It's the biggest blemish in his resume. It's the reason right now I can't sit here and tell you he's a great head coach. I think he's a pretty good head coach. I think he's decent. But I can't say he's great because the way they finished last season, I thought they left a lot to be desired. But that doesn't mean to me, what I'm talking about is these three games going 8-8 instead of 5-11 shouldn't matter at all. If you're just dismissing that they went 3-0 when five or six regimes before this and five or six iterations of the Redskins went 0-3 or 1-2 and looked terrible doing it, then I don't think you're acknowledging that this does feel a little bit different and that clearly they do like playing for this guy.
You know, I had Nate Davis on my show yesterday, who I know you guys are friendly with also, and he said this is Gruden's finest coaching performance because of all the injuries and also because of the mismanagement of certain skill positions by the front office moving in to this season. And now, I mean, I'm not advocating bringing back Arsenio Jackson, but we know now that the wide receiver position was horribly mismanaged. The backfield, I think I would still make the argument that it was horribly mismanaged. And the fact that Gruden has kind of salvaged an 8-8 season, Nate Davis seems to think this is his best coaching job. So it would be interesting if he got fired after, you know, some talking heads are believing this is his finest work.
And I may steal that topic from you, Chad Dukes. That sounds like a good one to me to take some calls on. You should do this for a living.
If you're stealing from me, Grant, you're stealing twice, so I take no offense.
Chad, thank you, buddy. Good hearing from you.
All right, bud.
I'll be listening at 2 o'clock, Chad Dukes versus the world. And I think Chad can be right, and what I'm saying can also be correct, in that his point is they did not play their best games when they had to. Correct. That Cowboys game, your season's on the line, you laid an egg. To me, that was performance issue based. That was a Jamison Crowder killed you that night. Now, there are a couple other guys that you could say that about, too. The Chargers game was a systematic failure. You were maybe the worst team in the NFL that weekend. And if that's what I'm basing everyone's future off of, fire and blow everybody out, and everyone can turn in their key cards in a basket when they walk out the door. I don't make decisions based on four quarters. I don't make decisions based on 1 week when I got a 17-week sample and multiple years for most of these guys here. But I do think that the last quarter of the year, again, 18% of their season is these three games that a lot of you are saying, 5-11, 8-8, what's really the difference? That's a lot of percentage points of your year. Almost a quarter of the year you're talking about just saying, doesn't really matter, those teams were bad. Okay, so the Redskins are now better than the bad teams. So you now expect them to beat Arizona with Gabbert. You now expect them to beat Denver with Osweiler. 3 years ago, you didn't, because you couldn't take games for granted. You now expect them to beat the Giants in Week 17. When you were going 3-13 and Shanahan's getting fired, there was no one in the league you would have expected them to beat. There's now 9 or 10 teams like that. I'm a loser, yes. I have a losing mentality, sure. I also am here to point out progress, and that's what that is. Grant and Danny on the Fan. We'll wrap up this conversation with your calls next. You want to chime in? 800-636-1067.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.